You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Here on a Wednesday, and joining me because of his own good nature and through the wonders of Skype this morning is Chris Woodbridge. Woody, how are you? Welcome to All Marine Radio.
I'm good, Mac. How can you hear me?
What's that? How do I hear you?
Yeah.
A little bit muffled. But
okay, how about now?
That is perfect. I'm not sure what you did. You must have a new headset.
Yeah, I'm experimenting with new hardware.
All right. I will be happy to help you work through that if you want to.
No, we're doing fine.
All right. Well, not this second, but if you want to call me back, I'd be happy to. Breaking news today, and you've been a commanding officer in the Marine Corps, so I would be remiss if I didn't ask you, but a Marine Corps name, Lieutenant Colonel Mike Regner, son of Major General Mike Regner, relieved as commanding officer of 1-4 after a very visible incident. Thoughts on that? You've been a commanding officer. A lot of times you see commanding officers relieved, and really the failures were echelons below them. But at the end of the day, you're held accountable. And without an investigation, tough to have a conversation about any of it. But whenever you see things like this, it is you're absolutely responsible and normally held that way. Yay?
No, you're absolutely right. And again, without any public information about the investigation, it would be wrong to speculate. All we know is what the official announcement press release cites as the MEF commanders and the MEF commanding generals' loss of confidence. We all know that that's kind of a goad shorthand, and there's an awful lot more that will be behind that may not be cleared for public release. But what you say is spot on, and the fact is that when you are in command, the senior man, you are responsible for everything the unit does and everything the unit fails to do, and often many things that are not under your direct control are still something that you're accountable for, because ultimately you're responsible for it. This is a tragic incident, and it's only in some ways made more tragic by the inevitable grinding of an investigation and the outcomes involved. But again, as a former commander, as all of us have been in that position, know any number of decisions and their consequences on any given day, on any given training exercise or operation, can have devastating impacts for the Marines that you lead, and ultimately for yourself. Certainly something well known to the battalion commander and anyone who's been in that position.
I want to ask you about 2 weeks ago we had the second mid-air collision between a refueling aircraft and a KC-130 aircraft. I don't remember, I joined the Marine Corps in 1983, I don't remember a collision. Now, I'm familiar with, the basket was damaged, the refueling line pulled off, blah, 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 blah. But to go bump in the middle of a clear day over Southern California, I don't know, Woody, it's pretty disturbing. And but for the grace of God, there weren't another 8 Marines killed in that incident. As you begin to put the mosaic of this together, And this subject was brought up by General Furness a couple of years ago in terms of the discipline of our force. And when discipline is a very broad word, the attention to detail, the brilliance in the basics, all the things that we've been educated. And again, I'll just give you a stupid one that I see. And that is when you and I were young many years ago, when we took over someplace, and it doesn't matter if it was at Camp Muchuk in Korea. It doesn't matter if it was some base in Thailand during Cobra Gold. It doesn't matter if it was a Quonset hut at Camp Pendleton. The first thing that happened was that shit got cleaned. And we raked the sand, and we painted the rocks, and we put up the ropes and the little wood stanchions that the gunny had. And if you fucking walked on his dirt that was raked, you know, God help you, man. But that was our statement about us. I don't see that anymore. And I remember the backlash that General Furness got. How dare you say this about us? To me, was reminiscent of what we see on social media today when reality doesn't conform with the social media narrative. So the news is now gets twisted by organizations, in my opinion, like the New York Times, to fit the social media narrative. And if it doesn't, then we got a problem. Okay. So is the Marine Corps in a similar space in that, you know, how the hell do we have aircraft going bump in the day or bump in the night with refuelers? And then if you throw the event over Mississippi, you know, into the mix, that's three catastrophic events involving KC-130s or C-130s. In 3 years. And I don't remember. I remember, like, you want to go into oblivion? Join the C-130 community. We'll never hear from you again. Because they don't do anything that breaks squelch. So I'm curious about your thoughts on that. Because as you connect the dots, right, this is not a pretty picture. And add on top of that, the Bonhomme Richard burning for 5 days in port. It's a vessel designed to contain damage. To do damage control, it's keeled for that. And I don't know that the Forrestal or the Ranger burned for that long at sea when they had bombs blowing up on them, for God's sakes. So is this, I mean, was General Furness's comments, were they just a precursor to something that we're in denial about? And that is daily operational excellence. And let me throw one more log on the fire before I turn you loose. The SecNav, this is kind of a therapy session for me. The SecNav published a 100-day, you know, letter. Not one sentence in the letter dealt with operational excellence. Not one. It was about your VA benefits, your tuition assistance, your concern about housing, your concern about this. It was all the me stuff. It was none of the, this is our primary function, right? I want to tell you my thoughts on operational excellence, and then we'll get to all the other shit after that. So given that as a backdrop, right, are we going down the same road as our culture is, and that we have a narrative that everything's good, and the more diverse we are and the more all of that we are, it's all good, but we suck operationally? Is that a concern that ought to be breaking squelch for people, or is McNamara just losing his mind or continuing to lose his mind?
I think this is a case where both can be true. What I mean by that specifically is, I think, first of all, there's a danger in allowing yourself or even attempting to connect too many dots. There are dots that are very clearly related. And then there are others when you broaden that aperture out too far, you start to lose the validity of those connections. So let me be a little more specific there. First of all, I think a series of aviation mishaps, again, still under investigation. So once again, dangerous to jump to too many conclusions. But that can be an indicator of overall readiness or training concerns within that type model series community, or within a number of communities, or within a given task, within a given aviation NATOPS task that has to be trained to consistently to develop proficiency and mastery of that task. And with limited resources or limitations on flight hours, training hours, maintenance limitations, the ability to consistently and thoroughly train to those tasks can be compromised. So I think that that's one potential trend that may be in evidence here. I don't know that, again, having not number one dug into the details of those investigations. But the broader issue of trying to open this aperture to a greater cultural problem. Again, I'd be careful about connecting too many dots. However, there certainly may be some systemic disconnect in the naval service, and I'll write that that large as far as focusing on what is most important, which is operational readiness, and potentially looking at the effects of a combination of some op tempo issues, some personnel tempo issues, and again an overall I don't want to say a loss of focus, but a shift in focus over the last decade or so. So a long way of getting to an answer there, but it is certainly of concern. There's no question it's of concern. The leadership of the Marine Corps, from the Commandant, DC Aviation, to the operational FMF commanders at the MEF and wing level, this is number one importance item for the good of the service, our capabilities, and the Marines that we lead. So there's no question that this is not being investigated properly, and that if there are systemic causes underlying this, that they're going to be addressed. As far as how this makes its way out into the media narrative, be that social media or traditional media, I take a big grain of salt and a step back, because that entire environment, in my mind, has become compromised. There is seemingly no requirement for veracity, for truthfulness, in any media today. And so, as a for-profit business, if they can tell enough truth not to get sued and lose money, or lose sponsorships and advertising dollars, then they're gonna obfuscate or tell half truths as much as they can, and that will also serve in many cases other agendas, political or associated agendas.
I want to ask you. I have a guy comes on, former Marine Alex Hollings. He's the editor in chief of Sandbox News, and it's kind of interesting because he's a web guy and a web content guy, and Alex talks about the need to do what is referred to as news porn in order to get the numbers that you need in order to, get the goals that you're looking for, blah, blah, blah. And that is, why does any large organization do Liz Hurley bikini pictures? Well, because people click on those. And you need those numbers, that's certainly not news. I mean, by any hard news definition, it's some, it's TMZ stuff. So why would an organization, and like Fox News, why would their masthead be on Liz Hurley's bikini pictures? Well, because there's millions and millions of hits associated with that get lumped into, that get lumped into pitches to advertisers in terms of this is how many people are going to see your stuff on a daily basis. You guys don't do that.
No, that's absolutely right. And I can speak with some authority on that. I know full well the impact of viewership, readership, membership, and how the advertising world looks at that. And I know it from the very, you know, from the tiny fish end of the pond,
right?
In terms of the numbers, readership, both in our print and our digital products. And you know, you can only be truthful about that. You can try to massage and inflate those numbers as much as possible. But you're right. Unless you start going down that road as the term used, news porn or content porn, just to build click rates, just to build view numbers and traffic on a website, or you know, subscriptions or memberships for your print media, you're not really going to move that needle that much. And you need to move that needle if you're looking for that sort of endorsement or money.
Yeah, it's just it's disturbing. And
well, what it highlights is that it is in those outlets, it is a for-profit business.
Right.
A little different in my world because we are a nonprofit organization. However, we still have to raise revenue. So it's not entirely free of those concerns.
You live in kind of a hybrid world. Let me ask you a question about USNI News. It would be, to me, it's akin to if you guys turned and sponsored or stood up a news division. USNI News, same. They are subordinate to a nonprofit organization. You know, still have to pay their own freight, but. You tend not to see, porn stories. And I would say, I mean, if you look at Stars and Stripes, the daily count of how many soldiers that just got to South Korea are positive with COVID. Like, are you kidding me? That's a story? You know, today in Marine Corps Times, 24 Marines got in a bar fight, investigation ensuing. That's a story, for God's sakes. It's like, you're kidding me, right? And so this is like, let's sensationalize this bar fight, that 18 Lance Corporals got into, and that's a story now. On a global publication, that's a story. You tend not to see that in USNI News. They would be the same model as Marine Corps Times?
Yes,
I'm not Marine Corps talking, but Marine Corps Gazette.
I think it would be much closer
to you guys.
To the model of the Gazette and Leatherneck and the association's web content, and because I would snap the chalk line between USNI News and the other Defense Times,
right.
Defense News outlets, and certainly. Stars and Stripes and any other more commercial media. And the difference being that, again, as nonprofits, we have on the philosophical level, we do serve a higher mission. But also on a practical level, we get our money a little differently. And in the case of USNI, they have another buffer, in the form of the Naval Institute Trust that can offset some of their costs without having to, my words, without having to prostitute yourself to some of these external factors or interests that lead you down the road of this kind of tainted content.
No, that's well said. And you notice it when you go to the website because there isn't all this fluff. It tends to be hard news story after hard news story, or maybe not hard news, substantive story after substantive story after substantive story. And so just different. I don't know. I've been acutely sensitized, and now I would ask you, like, so where do you get your news, Woody? I tell people, look, if you want to be able to shut all the other news outlets out, and it is pricey, right, subscribe to the Wall Street Journal. Now, you can go get your editorial content wherever you want to, But in terms of people that report news, the Wall Street Journal does it still. Their news division, in my opinion, is peerless. The New York Times is, in my opinion, at the other end of the spectrum. It is a pathetic symbol of what's wrong with our media. It is the social media narrative has to is Trump's all, no pun intended, right? And the news has to be twisted or somehow modified to conform to the social media, where in years past, and I have the guy who bought the New York Times in 1900, Adolf Ox, I believe is his name. He's a German immigrant, son of a German immigrant, born in Cincinnati. And he wrote this: to make the columns of the New York Times a forum for considerations of all questions of public importance, and to that end, invite intelligent discussion from all shades of opinion. The New York Times cannot be farther from that vision. And so that's the world that we live in now, where the narrative is social media, and the news organizations conform it. So on a personal note, where do you get your news?
The Journal online, Wall Street Journal online, is a great source if you're looking for a modicum of factual reporting without the editorializing, or as I have my word, opinioneering embedded into the actual reporting. Some folks might not expect, but the Christian Science Monitor is also fairly clean, if you want to use that term, in terms of separating opinion or op-ed content from fact-based reporting.
And you know what? And you're the second person in 2 days that has mentioned the Christian Science Monitor here. And it has always had a reputation for that, yes?
Yeah, it has. Yeah. Yeah, certainly since I first came in contact with it back in the early 80s.
Right, right. Interesting, because it's always been kind of the straight shooter of all media organizations.
But I think the point is, you've mentioned this before, is you really have to work at it.
Right.
If you just kind of sit back and go the easy route for getting your daily news information, whether that's in print, television, or online, what's going to hit you right up front is crap. It is not necessarily fact based. It's enough facts to get to an opinion or an editorial point of view, rather than presenting facts and allowing the reader to draw conclusions.
Well, you know what, that has been the sea change. And it used to be reporting and newspaper, the newspaper business put the facts in front of a reader and allowed the reader to decide. That is no longer the case. There is a agenda that comes with the news now, and it starts in social media. So to me, before it was these are the facts, the reader, decides. Now it's, no, we're going to tell you the conclusion and give you the facts that support that. And that's where we are today. And that's, I think you put it very well. You have to work if you want to get to the truth. And again, to me, the great lie in this country, one of the great lies is that the police in this country are hunting black men. And if you look at the Washington Post database, you look at the FBI database, you will see the facts, and the facts are the exact opposite. Those numbers have gone down every year. And if you footnote every one of those shootings, unarmed black men tried to run over a police officer with a vehicle and was shot and killed. Well, that's not unarmed, in my opinion. And then when you cull through that, you come out, and I've done it for the last few years, with less than 5 in a nation of 325 million people shootings but those facts, that's not the narrative.
I think there's two factors there. First, again, you have to work hard to get to those facts. And I think, unfortunately, the majority of folks don't have the intellectual curiosity to do that work. They're perfectly comfortable listening to the narrative and absorbing that in one form or another, and or the counter narrative, which is often equally fact free. You've also got and this is particularly acute now, what I call, something of a trip flare, which is that if you question the validity of that narrative, you are subject to personal attack.
Oh my God!
As a non-believer.
You know what the New York Times I found intriguing, right? And so I read Barry Weiss's resignation letter that she wrote to A.G. Sulzberger. And Barry Weiss, for those of you who don't listen on a regular basis, she was hired after the election in 2016 to help diversify a New York Times opinion page that had become too narrow and as a result was seen as out of touch with the American people. And so she writes about the harassment and the brutal working conditions that she endured at the New York Times and says colleagues won't speak out because there's a new McCarthyism. Now, Barry Weiss is not a conservative. She's a liberal. When you have liberals under the employ of the New York Times talking about a new McCarthyism, I mean, that ought to scare – and this is a matter of, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks ago that she wrote this, maybe a couple of months ago, that she wrote the email to him and published it. I mean, when you have that going on in, America's paper of record, that's pretty stunning stuff. And so, I don't know. It's to me, it's very disturbing because, it's organizations like that they set the line of departure for the discussion. And when the line of departure doesn't include the truth, holy shit, man.
Exactly. Shit. And why is there no requirement for truthfulness? That's the scariest part in this to me.
Because for job preservation, you'll get canceled.
Yes.
Right? You'll get canceled. I mean, it's interesting. In with LeBron James doing all his tweeting, nobody that covers him has ever asked him in public, hey, LeBron, I mean, are you aware of the FBI numbers, Washington Post database numbers that absolutely contradict what you're saying? And then ask yourself, well, why not? And the answer to that is you would be fired and canceled before your ass got home that night. And so there is this intimidation now that goes with the cancel culture that is, I think that is extremely disturbing around the country where you can't have a broad discussion, a liberal arts discussion about things that happen in this country because people scream at you and shout you down and you're not allowed to speak. You're canceled. And so that's how we advance our agenda. And again, when you and I grew up, I'm older than you, but the 60s and 70s, it's like, look, free speech is incredibly important. I don't really like what you're saying, but I will defend forever, you're right to say it, short of screaming, fire in a crowded theater. We don't live in that time anymore. I have a moral responsibility to negate your ability to articulate whatever your point of view of, if I disagree with it. And you listen to stuff like that, and you're like, wait a minute, that's like those are the words of totalitarianism.
That's exactly right. And it's, it's of great concern because, the foundation of our federal republic is an informed and educated populace, specifically the electorate within that populace, right. And this is an influence operation, in my opinion.
No, you know what? And that's a great way to articulate it. They have ceased to become news organizations and have become influence operators in that realm, and that's how you should look at them. And that's why and what I hope is that, whether it's, flight to the Christian Science Monitor, flight to the Wall Street Journal, is that slowly but surely start turning off the outlets that pollute the airwaves with their news. And I hope somebody creates something better, something along the lines of the McNeil Lear News Hour with maybe a little bit more personality, but But along those lines, right, where you're going to hear solid news and you're going to hear diverse opinions that can come to on a nightly basis, can in an articulate way discuss things and teach us all that we can do that. That it doesn't have to be screaming, yelling, and hostility. That we can talk about these complex issues of whether it be gender, race, operational excellence in our military, right? In under the backdrop of gender, race, and all the other things that go into what our military is tasked with now. And yet it doesn't. So I hope that something like that will show up and will rescue us from this stuff. But I agree. I think it. Dare I say, risk the democracy? Because I see this ending in violence someplace, in a big way, with a lot of dead people before we all learn the lessons of mutual respect, toning it down, being articulate, and not this cancel culture confrontation. I'm going to throw your food off your table because I want to. You know, I'm a little bit concerned if you can't tell.
No, you get no disagreement from me. I mean, there's a real danger in the, you know, some people call it a lack of civility. Right. It's a lack of civil discourse and an environment that does tend to escalate things way too quickly. I understand what you're saying. A threat to democracy, but I always fall back on Washington, as paraphrased by General Mattis, that this is really a big experiment, and it evolves over time. And I think we're going through a painful evolution right now. But I still have faith, I guess, that there will be a beneficial evolution to this over time. Right. Because it is in many ways, I think it's getting out of hand, and it's getting to a point where people really are starting to recognize that.
You know what? I do agree with you. I took solace in a couple of things that happened last week. One was that it was scholars that took to the internet at the risk of their own cancellation to call for the revocation of the Pulitzer Prize that the New York Times was awarded for journalism relative to the 1619 Project. Now, what I think is important is historians objected to it on the basis of historical facts, not in terms of historical interpretations. And they said, look, this is reaching a crisis proportion, right? When you have one of the great, and then, you know, I mean, if you follow the story, the New York Times went and deleted some of the more controversial elements with no footnote, with no explanation, with nothing. Right. I mean, look at that. It's laughable. It's just
ink and paper, man.
Right. It's like the high school newspaper gone wrong, except it's the New York Times. And so I take solace in the fact that you're starting to see intellectuals and academics saying, look, this has reached crisis proportion. And it's got to come to a conclusion. We've got to be able to discuss facts, right, in a calm setting, because this doesn't meet that benchmark. And so, and there was one other event that escapes me right now. But let's transition to your publication, so we can hold you accountable for it.
Thank you.
You bet. No, you know, I always enjoy having you on in the and at least a little bit of liberal arts discussion, whether we talk about operations or you know the events of the day. The theme of this month's Gazette is what?
So the October edition really honestly doesn't have one theme. With this month's edition,
Wait. I thought every month had a theme. What's going on?
Not true.
Not true?
Not true.
There you go.
So, no, October is, if you want to think of it that way, it does not have one theme. The goal with October's edition was to really – kind of cover the waterfront of the range of what we'll call, you know, 100-weight important issues that Marines are writing about right now. And so, you know, you'll see a mix of about almost 10 different subject areas across our ideas and issues I think are almost a little bit of a litmus test of so what are the issues Marines are thinking about and discussing right now. Not surprisingly, there is a fairly large section on really, you know, the new environment, the new warfighting function and domain that has truly become a strange attractor in terms of content and what people are working on, thinking about, and writing about, which is, you know, operations in the information environment, everything from traditional C4I through cyberspace operations, through influence operations, communication or strategic communication, public affairs, all of that under this aegis of OIE or ops in the information environment. And so you've got a chunk of about seven articles in that area. Some of them, you know, some more technical than others. I will tell you, you've got everything from you know, the electromagnetic spectrum and electronic warfare, through data research, up through application of maneuver warfare doctrine in the information environment. So again, from a very technical side up through the conceptual or almost philosophical side there.
Okay. I want to ask you about, could you explain how many different writing awards do you guys give out, and prominent in this month's Gazette, yeah, so our Chase Award winners? How many different writing awards do you guys give out, and how do they work? Are they endowed by somebody? Can you explain that to us?
Sure, absolutely. So in terms of what I'll call the big name awards, you've really got five, soon to be six, big name awards, and those are the Hogaboom Award, right. Chase, which is sometimes called the Boldness and Daring Award, the Ellis Innovation and Future War Essay Contest. You've got the Lieutenant General Trainer Writing Award, and then we've got two others that are also named. One is the Kaiser Family Irregular Warfare Writing Contest, and then brand new this year is the Colonel Tom O'Leary Memorial Writing Contest. That one is a little different because it is both the requirement, if you will, or the product is both an essay and a podcast, a TED Talk style podcast, as part of the call for papers, if you will. Now those are the named awards. There are a variety of other academic awards that we basically provide the prizes and the hardware for across Marine Corps schools, from, you know, the Marine Corps University to our sister service schools. And then there are also a variety of unit level writing awards. President of Marine Corps University has one. Headquarters and Service Battalion at Quantico has one that again are at unit level that we provide prizes and awards for. But for those big name awards, your question about endowment is a good one, and the answer is sort of. Some are supported by a sponsor or donor. Others are supported out of our general donation fund on the foundation side. A dollar that comes in that's not specifically earmarked for a given purpose goes into that general program fund, and that can be used as needed for the various writing awards.
All right, let me
good answer.
Yeah, no. I things I've seen forever, right? But just have never really asked anybody about.
What's that? Oh, go ahead.
No, I want to talk to you. On the index page of this month's magazine, it looks like either an article or a book entitled Flamethrower. What is that?
That's a book review. Book by Brian Rigg, and it's essentially a biographical book of the Medal of Honor recipient from from Iwo Jima. The review is written by Colonel John Hoffman, who everyone should recognize.
We do.
Or your leader, or your readers, or listeners should recognize as a one of the stalwarts of Marine Corps history as a historian and a writer for History Division. He reviewed Brian Riggs' book about Herschel Williams, Woody Williams, Medal of Honor recipient from Iwo Jima, again, his nickname or his claim to fame was lugging that tank of gelled gasoline around a volcanic island in the Pacific and using it to good effect against the Japanese defenders.
And oh, by the way, he's a wonderful guy too. He joined the Marine Corps because he really liked that uniform. He's from West Virginia and had a chance to spend the. Interview him on a couple of occasions, but just a wonderful guy. And he's got a foundation that he runs along with, I believe it's his grandson, and they put up Gold Star family memorials around the country. And he's he's a great credit to the Marine Corps, and as well as somebody who is wears the most distinguished decoration at the Nation Awards for Valor, but he's every bit of the person that you would hope he would be, I guess is a good way to say that. I want to ask you about an article that caught
one other point before we leave that I would bring forward about the book is it's more than a, and I was there story about Woody Williams. It's more than a battle study of Iwo Jima. There's also a much broader look at Japanese atrocities in China and the Pacific during the 30s and 40s, the lead up to World War II, and then obviously during the war. And some of that is geared towards raising awareness of what occurred during those years, again, as a the term used is the Japan's Holocaust. So to raise awareness of that.
Wow. The one of the things I have I spoken to you since I stumbled across the interviews that Studs Terkel did with Gene Sledge?
Yes. We talked about that last show.
One of the things that Sledge says is that, any in that southern draw and that plain spoken kind of way that he speaks with Terkel in those tapes, he says it always kind of, I don't know if he says bothered me that he said you'd see these picture of these, and he called them Japs, right, these dead Japanese soldiers, and they would be posing for pictures with flowers and they'd have their rifle, but there'd be this beautiful composition of flowers and things. So it was very artistic. And yet these guys would commit these horrible crimes. He said, I've never understood that, how they could be, have this, this artistic side and see beauty in this and want this in this picture that we would find in their belongings, this wallet picture taken someplace, and yet be so cruel on the other hand. So kind of interesting. But anyway, that comment comes to mind.
It's what happens when you don't think your enemy or the indigenous people are human.
Right.
When you've been taught from a young age that they're not.
Right.
It's a testament to that sort of enculturation.
The first place award in the chase contest is the Fantasy of MCDP-1. Is maneuver warfare still useful? And written by Lieutenant Colonel Thaddeus Drake.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that article.
This is something that you and I have talked about in the past a few times, and it among other points. That the author makes in this article is he brings out the cognitive dissonance, if you will, or the audio not matching the video regarding trust tactics, mission tactics, decentralized execution, and the environment of top-down, centralized control over some of the most mundane decisions within units. And so it's essentially a statement about how the Marine Corps has never truly institutionalized or embraced maneuver warfare, because we're never truly going to live up to those tenets of, again, trust tactics, initiative, you know, not having a zero defects mentality, allowing people to make mistakes, that we've never really delivered on that. So again, the winner overall in a something of an indictment, but certainly not not inaccurate.
Interesting. All right, give me a couple other things to read out of this month's Gazette that break squelch for you.
Well, I would also encourage reading the other winner, the number two second place winner, Major Leo Spader, frequent contributor to the Gazette. His second place article is essentially looking at warfighting MCDP-1 and making a recommendation that it number one needs to be updated, and it needs to be updated to look beyond the strictest definitions of war. He recommends retitling it MCDP-1 conflict and broadening it to look at the spectrum of competition, vice purely war fighting. So another great piece there.
Give us an example of the spectrum of competition. What does that mean?
Particularly think gray area activities in the South China Sea.
Got it.
As an example.
Got it. I mean, for instance, I mean, many would, and I'm one of them. If people in the United States don't believe that China's already at war with us, then I believe that you simply are not looking at at what China does on a daily basis to infiltrate American institutions, to conduct influence, electronic warfare, cyber warfare.
Yes.
So, yeah. I mean, if you define a war as bullets being fired, then I think that you need to go join, you know, Peter O'Toole in Lawrence of Arabia, because the world has left you behind.
Well, and that's something of the criticism in the essay, is that as written, MCDP-1 is overly focused on war of fire and maneuver.
Right. Give us something else that you find that you think we would find interesting.
Well, I mean, as I say frequently, everything is worth people's time.
Sure,
but
we don't have time.
I wouldn't be publishing it if it wasn't.
We know that.
There's so we've started to open up a new department under ideas and issues where we really hadn't touched on too much in the past, which is strategy and policy. And again, it's difficult to kind of thread the needle because, you know, the Marine Corps as a service does not make strategy. It can execute strategy. It can contribute and influence strategic decisions and policy decisions. But it's something that Marines are interested in, study and research and write about. And so, again, we're starting to put some additional content on that on the monthly table of contents. In October, you've got the first in a series by Master Guns Andy Anderson. He has written a series on China's hybrid warfare, again, to the subject you were just talking about. So I think everyone would be interested in that as well.
I like that. The and just so I know, I mean, does it go into China's use of, you know, their economy as a weapon and all their fishing fleets, essentially every element of what China, you know, brings to the table?
The series will. Right. The series will. And we're introducing, I don't want to steal my own thunder for next month, but in November, We'll be expanding on that that discussion, and we've got some excellent articles, including a look at really China's hybrid war beyond the South China Sea, specifically Chinese influence operations in Burma, and so this is something that I think will start getting a lot more attention here in the months to come.
That's awesome. I mean, timely news today. The CNO said yesterday, "Hey, China is the strategic rival." Yesterday, the happy birthday to all you sailors out there again.
Oh, yes, absolutely. That's one day belated.
But
our American Navy.
Yeah, but the CNO, quote, China is the strategic threat to the United States. So Admiral Gilday in the news. Let me see. No, that was the article that caught my eye as I was scanning down the list. I have to tell you that for those of you who don't subscribe to the Gazette, shame on you. But the format that it displays is one beautiful. I have to tell you, I'm pleasantly surprised. I mean, even like little stuff, like when you touch on the page corner, it moves, right? And when you turn the page, it looks like you're turning the page, for God's sakes. And I just want to compliment you. I think it's you guys have done a fantastic job. If you want to read, like many people do now, electronically, it's a beautiful presentation of your magazine. Well done.
Thanks, Mac. I appreciate that. And there's some really great folks that work for us at the Gazette and the Association, and also our publisher out in Lebanon Junction, Kentucky.
Nice.
Who actually is a full service publisher, does our print magazines and the content for our digital media, and then our our web services folks who actually make this work. I appreciate the compliment. Those folks work hard, and sometimes they don't get the recognition they need.
Got it. All right. Is there anything before I let you go that you want to get off your chest that I haven't been smart enough to ask you, Woody?
Well, you know, last time we talked about a new feature on the Gazette blog, published some material there in a call to action regarding race in the Marine Corps. And, we've had some feedback on that worth publishing. I'll tell you, sadly, I've had some feedback that just simply can't see the light of day. There's some, again, we talk about sort of the lack of a fact-based counter-narrative. That's alive and well out there, too. And this is certainly not a push to get people to agree with any given author, but again, to get the information or the issue, if you will, and the perception of the information out in the open, so folks can talk about that. So I'd encourage your listeners to take a look and explore that on the blog, and whether they're a member or not, they can post comments and put their replies out there. And, if there's a matter of factual inaccuracy or disagreement, there's no reason not to put that up. But again, it's almost like this is such a tripwire issue in some ways. I think that a lot of folks are either hesitant to do it, to engage, and unfortunately, some of those who are not hesitant are not constructive in the comments that they're making.
Yeah, well, that's. I mean, I think that if you want to affirm that we're on the path to the destruction of the planet, just scroll down to the comment section of anything that you look at, and you will quickly conclude that the civilization has failed and it should be eliminated as quickly as possible. So I'd like to say that I am surprised, but I'm not. And so the issue, Woody, I've had these discussions because one of the things that and this is counter to the narrative, right? And that is, if you're a talented person and you're a minority in the Marine Corps is looking for you. Now, that's counter to the narrative, but the Marine Corps is seeking you. It's not like it's lost on leaders in the Marine Corps that it needs leaders that are minorities in terms of background. It's not lost on anybody. And so the Marine Corps is looking for you and will accelerate you if you show promise. Now, I believe that to be true, but I don't know. I mean, when you articulate that in a forum, that's not the narrative of the forum. And so I find it interesting. And then in talking to recruiters, one of the things that they say is, look, were you a recruiter ever?
I was never on recruiting duty. Okay. No.
One of the things they say is, hey, look, the competition for high performing minority, males or females, is crazy at in terms of officer ranks. And in terms of high performing minority people, regardless of gender, in high school, same. And so we've got to figure out how to make this life of service in the Marine Corps more appealing to that high-end person, because that's who we're looking for. Because ultimately, they will become the general officers, they will become the sergeant majors, but that competition is ferocious. And I found that to be very interesting, something that I didn't know about. And I thought, looking at it, and then I read that relative to corporations with the same lament. You want to know why we're not more demographically? It's because we all fight for that same pool across the spectrum of industry, government, and the nonprofit businesses. We all fight for that same small sliver, but we're looking for it. We actively try to promote it, blah 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 blah. So I don't know. To me, it's a hard. I even know when I try to do it here, you have to be very careful with the people that you bring on. Lest you be counseled as well by something that somebody says. And luckily for me, when I do those things, I tend to record them so I can edit them for that very reason. I don't do them live.
Moderating or curating your comments and your interaction, I have found, is critical.
Oh my God, that you don't become somebody else's poster child. Exactly. So again, I like some of the comments I'm reading, I applaud you for doing it. And I don't think it's as simple. The answer is, I don't think it's as simple as there's a bias in the Marine Corps. I will tell you this. As a child of the 60s, I didn't give a shit what color anybody was. And I've served with great men and great women. I've served with Marines that are, black, white, Hispanic, brown, yellow, whatever the color was. It didn't matter. And I would tell you this. In the Marine Corps I've served in, it never mattered. Now, are there bigots? Yes. Do those populate, I would say, every organization across the nation? Yes. But there's a huge difference between having anecdotal run-ins with bigots and institutional racism. And so to me, how we get to ground truth on all of that, right, and how we make the system better is extremely important. And one of the interesting discussions is, if you take gender off who you're promoting, if you take race off who you're promoting, right, what happens if that sends the numbers in the wrong direction?
Well, we may be in a position where we find out the answer to that as photographs are taken off of master brief sheets as part of promotion boards. I suspect that there may be an unintended consequence in that if it's allowed to do what I think it was intended to do, which is to blind the board. There may in fact be a negative reaction to that. We'll see. But I just think that is it's kind of a ham-handed attempt to fix it, what may or may not.
Well, to me, what it does is it plays to the social media narrative. But I think that when you get to the
reality, I would say it briefs well.
Right. No, you're right. It briefs well. And what's going to happen in the closed room when we do that and we look at the numbers and then we go, there's no way we can air that. Give me those books. Right. And so, this is the conversation that you got to have if you want to go
that's
there. Right.
Right. That's right.
And that's why, to me,
that was my overall goal in opening this up on our blog. You know, the historical piece to it, I think, is important as well. I encourage all your listeners to at least listen to or watch the podcast by General Peterson. You know, there's a window into the Marine Corps of the late 1950s. Actually, not that late 1950s, 1952, while Korea is going on, as the the first African American fighter pilot. So to look at that as a touchstone, as a sort of a waypoint for where we've come from, I think is very valuable.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting for people that think this is, that race relations in our country are as bad as they've ever been. I mean, to me, I think you lack a little bit of historical perspective because, you know, I grew up when the N-word was a noun. It was used as a noun, right? It was not used as an adverb or an adjective or whatnot. It was used as a noun in discussion, and you would hear it, and you'd think, "What?" And again, we're a little bit different. I mean, we've elected a black man president of this country twice. There's a black woman. I'm not sure if you know this, Woody. There's a black woman who's a candidate to be vice president of the United States, right? It's not even a discussion item anywhere, right?
Right.
It's not even a discussion. It doesn't even break squelch. And the largest growing segment in the census is mixed race families. So, I mean, to me, again, that's this problem of narrative as opposed to fact. And,
right.
And to me, and it's these discussions that beg for fact and footnoted articulate discourse so that we can push the ball. Because I think there's a fair amount of concern that if you take pictures and if you take gender and if you take race out of the mix, that those numbers might be headed in the wrong direction and that there is a function for those if we're going to grow those numbers. And so, and whether that is a accurate assessment or somebody's biased assessment will only be played out as this thing becomes more real. And we've got to have a mechanism to say, okay, we've got to be able to course correct, because we do believe that it is important at that level that we reflect our culture. And that means X percentage of this, X percentage of that, X percentage of this. And so, they're hard, thorny, difficult
issues.
Bound
together by the cohesion that makes an effective fighting force.
Right.
And that cohesion requires trust. And so I think that's really, again, focusing on making the institution better, focus on the purpose of the institution and how these this environment can support that purpose. That's the real key.
Well, let me tell you, but you are, in fact, it's interesting, this kind of thing kind of comes back full circle to what we began talking about, and that is, the poison of social media relative to the truth and the poisoning of great institutions, one of them being the New York Times, that is now poisoned in terms of content. And so the world is not as social media would project it. And so you've got – what you're trying to do is reconcile these two worlds. And I want to wish you all the best of that, of luck to that, Woody. So make sure you wear your helmet and don't misjudge your defilade, for God's sakes, because you will get whacked in the process. But again, it's things that we ought to be able to do as grownups is to sit around and have a discussion you know, about race in the Marine Corps, about gender in the Marine Corps, about operational excellence in the Marine Corps, and about discipline in the Marine Corps. But I will tell you this, the strongest reaction that I've seen isn't about race or gender. It's been about discipline. How dare you tell us we're not good enough? How dare, and when everybody knows that's a fact, and yet we're not really going to talk about that. So,
interesting.
Yeah, interesting. All right, sir. First of all, always appreciate your visit. I just want to tell you, you have a lot of fans out there, just so you know, and in case you don't. But a lot of people really enjoy when you come on, your perspective, and whether we be talking leadership, journalism, or current events. So thank you very much again.
All righty, Matt. Appreciate it. Thanks again.
Yep, always. See you. Bye. There you have it. Chris Woodbridge. Yeah, let me tell you, that takes no small amount of intellectual courage, right? And the platform to say we're going to have a conversation. And because most of the time that conversation gets blown up quite early by social media warriors. Who, if it doesn't look like you're framing the discussion the way they want it framed, you're going to get aired out and canceled. And that's the way that shit works. That's the way it worked at the New York Times, right? The masthead, which I've copied now and pasted into my CEO notes, which is a PowerPoint folder that I keep. It's a PowerPoint presentation. And it has... For instance, when I get done and I build the post for this, it has the keywords that I use, right? For different segments, right? And because Woody comes on a regular basis, I have those so I don't have to type them out every time. I just copy and paste them. It has the pictures, the format, the frame for the pictures that I use with the post. It has things like... They came first for the communists, and I didn't speak up because I wasn't a communist. Then they came for the Jews, and I didn't speak up because I wasn't a Jew. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I didn't speak up because I wasn't a trade union. And then they came for the Catholics, and I didn't speak up because I was a Protestant. And then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak up. So it has all that kind of stuff. So this... Adolf Ochs, O-C-H-S, 1896, when he bought the New York Times for $75,000 because it was on its ass in the newspaper competition of New York City. To make the columns of the New York Times a forum for the consideration of all questions of public importance, and to that end, to invite intelligent discussion from all shades of opinion. They are so far from it, and I applaud Chris Woodbridge for taking the Marine Corps Gazette in that direction and talking about the 900-pound gorilla in the room. So, on this Wednesday hump day, have a great day. If you're just tuning in hour one, we talk about the relief of the commanding officer of 1st Battalion, 4th Marines, Lieutenant Colonel Michael Regner. And that the leading news today. And then after that, there's two articles that I found that interesting. And one is by Victor Davis Hanson. And the other one is a Wall Street Journal editorial about the fact that Amazon, which was scheduled to release a documentary entitled What's the title? What Killed Michael Brown? ? It's a product of a writer, a scholar, Shelby Steele. He's based out of the Stanford University's Hoover Institution, right? And his son, they produced this. And Amazon is now thinking about not publishing it because the content doesn't agree with the social media narrative out in the country today. So talk about that, and also talk about an article about the Victor Davis Hanson articles about Fragments of a Civilization. And the subtitle is Government Crimes and Cover-Ups, a Corrupt Media, a Candidate Lying and Hiding in from the Public, and Plans to Undo the Foundation of the Republic. So it's an interesting look at our government. I read a part of it, but I didn't have time to read all of it. But again, if we're not all concerned about the tone and tenor of this democracy, then shame on you. You're just a political hack that doesn't believe in what our nation truly stands for, which is ultimately truth, right? You just want more power for your party, and shame on you. Shame on you. So with that said, have a great day. Don't be afraid to change somebody's life. It's the best business to be in. All Marine Radio on a Wednesday. Out.